one of the signs. Some of the signs are inability to sleep, or else you want to sleep too much. I can remember when my dad was going in the hospital all the time, I would just lay awake at night waiting for the phone to ring at midnight so I would go to the ER. So I couldn't sleep at all. Also digestive issues, your gut starts acting up. Also headaches, also muscle tension. Those are all physical signs that your body is shouting at you, take care of me, take care of me. And then psychological signs are increased depression, increased anxiety, feelings of helplessness, feelings of hopelessness, and increased anxiety and uncertainty about what the future is going to happen and what's happening day to day, hour to hour. And I would say behaviorally, if you find that you're isolating more, that you're more short-tempered, that your frustration gets much higher, those are all red light signals that you need to step back and get some help, and that you're entering a burnout. You're entering a potential burnout phase, or depending on the severity of the symptoms I just described, you're there.
It sounds like career burnout. It's the same thing. And the thing is, it's because it can become like a job, right? I mean, this is more than 40 hours.
It can take more than that. You're exactly right. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's so important to be able to say no when you're asked to do something that you know you can't do. It's important to say, I deserve some it's called respite time. And that's just a time to nourish your body, your mind, and to rebuild your energy. And so some of the things to do to stop that burnout from happening, or to slow it down, or to address it, is make space in your life for people that you love and care about that, and you trust, that you can feel relaxed and comfortable with. And also to do things for yourself that nurture your body and your soul and your mind. It could be something as simple as putting a bubble bath on and having a glass of wine, or reading a good book, or going to a movie, or but having people in your life that you can rely on and trust to be there for you, and making that space is hugely challenging for a lot of people, but incredibly important in terms of caregiving. And also mindfulness techniques are really important too. Exercise, deep breathing, meditation, eating well, sleeping well, all of those things are super important, and they really help.
Yeah. You know, thinking about the movie, it's like, how are you there? Like watching the movie, you're 2 hours, you're thinking about, is there going to be a fall? Is there going to be this? Is there going to be that? And I think that's where those mindfulness things come into play.
Well, the key is, I said respite. And so you have a designated person that comes in, if they need to have someone with them, a designated person that comes in for 2 hours in a week. So you can go have a nice meal, or you can go to a movie. And so you can be there and be present and know that the person that you're with is safe. And that could be a family member. It could be a neighbor. It could be a healthcare professional. It could be any of those. Just someone to give you that opportunity to take that time for yourself. And I really tell people it's a gift for yourself and the person you're taking care of. And the other thing I recommend to people that sort of lowers that stress part of caregiving is to try to incorporate fun things in the caregiving. So for example, what I mean is, if the person you're taking care of loves music, playing music with them that they love, that's particularly effective for people that have dementia, because those deep memories, our old memories, are there. And so sitting with them and singing the song with them, or going for a walk, or if there's a beautiful garden in the backyard, taking them out, so that as you're caregiving, you're doing fun, lovely things together. And that can Caregiving is an incredibly intimate kind of experience, but it can rebuild relationships, it can repair relationships, and it can be incredibly rewarding too. And so those are some of the things you can do to help along those ways, or pulling out old photographs or videos of family and talking about those. that's a really great thing to do. It's great for reminiscing. It's great for memory, and it can be fun for the person that's doing it. The matriarch of our family died last year, and her grandson was living with her, taking care of her. And he, an hour and a half every day, they sat there and they went through family photos. And we were at the funeral, and he said, just hearing her talk about the family and then looking at those pictures were some of the most beautiful moments he ever had. Mm. And he loved it. And she loved it too.
Well, and the beauty part of that is those stories now have passed on to a new generation. The stories that she knew have gone on, and those live longer.
Exactly. It's a legacy.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. We've talked about like that first awkward conversation. Now that there's at some point that other kind of potential awkward conversation where maybe it's just you've maybe realized like, okay, I am burning out. There needs to be something done here, or this is just, I can't handle this anymore. I can't, you know, help get them to the shower. It's hurting my back. It's hurting this. It's hurting like there's physical and mental symptoms going on with the caregiver, where it's to a point where maybe they need some additional help. Maybe they need a 24-hour nurse. They need to, you know, move into an assisted living or something along those lines. Like that other conversation. If you're already burned out, how do you successfully have that conversation? Because I would imagine that's going to be really difficult.
Yeah, it's a very tough conversation. I guess I'd like to start by saying I would go back to that early conversation at the beginning. And when you begin to just sort of think about how we're going to help mom and dad or whoever, I would look at who in the family is going to be able to participate in some way. And it may be that someone's not geographically close. And what you do is you identify the skill sets of the people that are going to be a part of the process. So in my case, for example, I was the medical person. I was the person that dealt with the hospital. My sister lives in London, but she wanted to help. And so what she did was she helped with paying some of the bills. And mm-hmm. And then she came in when we needed some respite. My brother was in California and I'm in Chicago, and he came in and he helped with respite. And so you identify the skill sets, or maybe someone that knows how to read an insurance bill. That is a huge headache for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But so you divide up the labor right away. So you're not starting from a place where as a caregiver, you're doing everything. And if you don't have family members, there may be a beloved old friend of the family. There may be a neighbor. There may be someone in the church that can help. There's all kinds of resources. There's all kinds of home health care programs that you can go to if you want professional help. And I would say, too, if there's a reluctance to have the conversation, another thing to do is to do it in the doctor's office with their doctor, because that has a lot more weight than if your daughter or son says something when the doctor says something. And so having a mm-hmm. trusted person, it might be your priest or your rabbi or whoever, but having a person like that you know your loved one trusts and will listen to can take away some of that potential conflict and stress.
Right. Yeah, I do the we've kind of done this the skill set split in my family. For my mom, I'm doing like all the taxes, the bills, the legal, the like whatever that is.
That's tough.
And it's like it's a skill set of mine. It's what I do. It's, you know, like comfortable for me. So it doesn't burn me out to do that stuff. I don't feel like I'm doing my taxes, I'm just going to do one more. Like, is it really that much more?
Exactly.
So it's kind of nice too, when you're thinking about it that way and you're kind of dividing up that skill set. It's like, where do you find joy? Where do you find comfort? Where can you do stuff that's within your comfort level that's not going to burn you out?
Exactly. And also, I think lots of times people do want to contribute in some way. They may mm-hmm. not. They yeah. may not be yeah. physically close, so they can't be there every day, and so it's really important to have that discussion with whoever's going to be a member of the caregiving team. And I think it's really important to identify who those folks are, and if you need to bring in healthcare professionals or other people. And the other thing I want to say too, in terms of burnout, where people are feeling they don't really have an opportunity to get out, the internet again is can be a blessing or a curse, but it's a blessing. There are all kinds of chat rooms, support chat rooms, and resources mm-hmm. for caregivers online. And I think it's so important, if you can't physically go to a caregiver support group, to be able to go online and talk to other people and feel you're not the only one that feels like they're going crazy, or that you're feeling frustrated, or you're feeling guilty, or you're feeling anxious.
Yeah.
That feeling of not being alone is so hugely important when you're a caregiver. And other caregivers also may have tips that they can share with you about challenges that they had that are mirror what you're going through. And so that's a really great resource. There's also great great places online, the Family Caregiver Alliance, the your local area on aging office, or the National Alliance for Caregivers. They are full of resources. They have support available. They have counseling available. And they're literally at your fingertips. You don't even need to leave the house to get that kind of support. So, and it's free. So that's another resource that I encourage people to tap into. There's a program called A Place for Mom, and people see Joan Ludden on TV. And it's an amazing program. It's free of charge. Wherever you live, you call an 800 number. Someone calls you back and gets information about the kind of place you're looking for, what kind of funds are available, and they help you find the next step. And it's all free.
Hospice was an interesting source for that, because we got information about hospice. And I realized, like, they have all kinds of information, whether you're going on hospice or not. They will help you. They will give you and direct you into these different agencies within your community so that you can find that help. It's amazing.
Yeah, hospice.
What they do
is a miracle. And it's a miracle for the patients, a miracle for families. And
oh, yeah.
110% support hospice. They helped. I helped two friends who were my age who didn't have any family, and their friends were their caregivers. And in both instances, we had hospice work with us, and it was such a blessing for all concerned.
Yeah.
And the main thing about hospice is they really believe in the dignity and and they have a very holistic approach with people. And so it's wonderful.
Yeah, definitely. And then also, you've got a bunch of articles that you put out on a regular basis on your Facebook page, which we'll link to in the description. You're putting out a ton of caregiver articles out there each week, which is awesome.
Yeah, Monday through Friday on my Facebook page and my author page. I put articles there that I've written, or podcasts that I've done, or other articles that I come across that have resource information or things of interest for caregivers.
And, you know, we went through the whole introduction, and I didn't even mention that you're an author as well. I should have done that in the beginning there, just to say, because you've got a book, Role Reversal, How to Take Care of Yourself and Your Aging Parents, which really,
yes.
It's been the whole topic of this discussion here. If you want to dig in a deeper on this, I would definitely get that. And get the book sooner rather than later, just like you're having these conversations sooner than later. Learn as much as you can about this while you can, while you have time, and while you have the patience and the bandwidth to do so. I definitely encourage that.
Yeah.
So we'll link to your book in the description, as well as your Facebook page for the articles. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you. It's been a real pleasure, Ross.
I feel like we could talk a ton more. Thank you so much. We'll have to get you back at some point to learn even more about this topic. Thank you for listening and subscribing to Learning More. We encourage you, and thank you for rating this podcast, sharing it with your friends. As with any podcast that gives medical or legal opinion, the information is not meant to substitute professional advice, and we encourage you to consult a professional to discuss your exact needs. On the next Learning More, we learn more. Okay, this is a rough one for me. We're going to learn about a plant-based diet. If you listen to my business podcast, yes, it's a business podcast where we talk business, but we talk a lot of, like, smoking meat, barbecuing meat, all that stuff. it's going to be tough for me to have this conversation. So next week is going to be really interesting. Could she switch me over to a plant-based diet? We're going to find out next week. Hey, if you've got a topic that you would like to learn more about, let us know. It just might become a future episode. Submit your ideas and comments at learningmorepodcast.com. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. I'm Russ, and I look forward to learning more with you next time.